Everyone, in this podcast, me and Mark decided to talk about the Back to the Future video game by Telltale, and we decided to do it kind of at the last minute, so we didn't really have a plan or any structure to the review, so this is kind of us talking about the game in no really meaningful way, but we do review it a little bit near the end, and also I had to keep my voice down because I had my parents sleeping in the next bedroom over, and I wanted to be talking loudly, so I'm kind of whispering and talking slowly. But hope you guys enjoy the review anyway. All right, see ya. Oh, and spoilers. There's going to be spoilers.
Hello and welcome to episode 49 of the Legendary Frogcast. I'm your host, Joseph Blanchett, and with me is a fellow cartoon movie guy, I guess.
That's a good description.
Yeah, it's Mark. Hey, Mark.
Hello.
Hello. And this is a totally spontaneous, poorly planned out podcast where we're going to review the Telltale adventure game, Back to the Future.
Back to the Future.
Which started way back in December, but just a few weeks ago it released its last episode.
And we both got around to finishing it as soon as I got back from my vacation.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, on the note of when it started with December, wasn't it supposed to originally be released like once a month?
Well, I think. Well, that's usually when Telltale games release. They're released once a month,
mm-hmm.
But in this case, their schedule never had it once a month. It said December, then February, then March, then April. Whatever, and then it had like a 2 month gap before the last one. So
yeah, it was a pretty long one.
So this, you haven't played a Telltale game before this, right?
Right. This is my first Telltale game, though I am a big fan of old Sierra adventure games as well as the Myst series and similar games like that. So it's pretty familiar territory.
And like LucasArts, because that's what this draws.
The only LucasArts one I had done was Full Throttle. It's a very good one.
Mm-hmm.
But I told him no Monkey Island, none of the other ones.
Yeah, so for those who don't know, Telltale is a developer who mostly have just done point-and-click adventure games. They began off with Sam & Max. They did a Homestar Runner game. They did a Monkey Island game.
Mm-hmm. And for all your kids out there listening, a point-and-click adventure game is what we played before controllers could hook up to the computer. And before we had the internet and could go look on how to beat these things very easily, we used to have a little hint booklet that we would use a special highlighter and they'd give us a hint.
Mm-hmm.
So then the internet came and these things died out for some reason.
First-person shooters back then had sprites and not 3D graphics. This was in the dinosaur ages of computers.
This was Super NES era.
Yeah,
pre-Super NES. Like, some of them I played didn't even use a mouse.
Yeah, adventure games, like, never really went away. There's always been an odd one here and there, mm-hmm. but it really ended when LucasArts released the fourth Monkey Island game, and it didn't perform well, and the one before that, Grim Fandango, was a critical success, but you know it sold like 12 copies or whatever.
The genre is just had its run. It's just everything's changed since then. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, you have a joke.
I was supposed to say, speaking of Grim Fandango, I have my two CDs of that game right here.
Ooh.
And
are you auctioning them off to some lucky viewer?
I plan on this thing's probably kind of rare now.
Yeah, probably. You look it up how much it's cost.
Yeah. Or maybe not rare at all. Everyone's gonna do it, but I fully plan on replaying this because I found some software that lets it run on newer machines.
Yeah, see, but, that's the one thing about adventure games is that once you played it, replayability tends to drop down pretty far because you know how all the puzzles.
How all the puzzle works. So this really isn't about adventure games.
Yes,
but Telltale did rejuvenate the genre when they released Sam & Max in episodes. And so they released like an episode of a season. At the time, there was like $9 an episode. It was about 3 to 4 hours of gameplay. And nowadays, when they release something, they just release it as a package and all that.
Mm.
But Yeah, about a little over a year ago, they announced they signed a deal with Universal, and they'll be making a Back to the Future game and a Jurassic Park game.
And we're here to talk about the Back to the Future game.
Yep, that was released first. They said it was going to be a brand new story that takes place after the third movie. And they got a voice actor that sounds like just like...
Amazingly sounds.
Yeah, he sounds
just
almost
like Michael J. Fox.
He's a let me find his actual name.
I got it up here somewhere.
We haven't planned this out. I'm looking.
Yeah, we're Wikipedia. Wikipedia right now.
Oh, this is
Michael Stemme. That's a writer.
That is not his name.
That's a writer.
I know that for a fact.
Yeah.
It's AJ.
If you're listening to this, fix up the Wikipedia article because it's not organized with cast members in mind.
Yeah, it doesn't say it. Well, his name is AJ something. He did a really good job. And they got,
AJ Locascio.
Yes.
AJ Locascio.
He also does a really good Captain Jack Sparrow impression.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so...
And of course, they managed to get the likenesses of both Michael J. Fox and Christopher Lloyd, and they also got Christopher Lloyd to voice himself.
And the first time I heard him, I was like, oh no, he sounds old. I mean, did you think that?
He does, but it's still him, and he still has his mannerisms.
Yeah, he doesn't have quite the energy.
No, yeah.
But
this game does take place. You can kind of say that he's been traveling around
for
a while. Technically, it's probably like 10 years after when Marty goes back from the Old West to the present, and then Doc shows up several years. He has two kids. It's probably 8 to 10 years.
Yeah, they actually mentioned it like in the game that they're looking for a school, like a colleges for his sons. So I think that's how they kind of got around it, saying, it's actually been 15 years since the last time we saw him or whatever.
Yeah.
20 years. But
they also, well, let's I guess start talking about the start of the gameplay and things they revived from the series. Because if you're a big fan of the original movies, they are very well written, interconnecting with each other. There's a lot of attention to detail, a lot of minor jokes and references to each of the other movies. And the game does go back and take some things from it. The one thing I didn't really like is that they brought the DeLorean back. And as much as I like the DeLorean, I'm glad they did bring it back because of how iconic it is.
Mm-hmm.
It just kind of seemed like a retcon.
A little bit. Well,
yeah.
Wasn't the DeLorean like... It was some like Paradox version of the DeLorean that happened when it got struck by lightning?
Yeah, some stupid thing like that.
Yeah, and that's how they explain it away. Yeah, so episode one is called It's About Time. It opens about 6 months after Back to Future 3.
It takes place in 1980, I think May 1986.
86, yeah.
Yeah.
And Doc's belongings are being auctioned off. And Marty's just like, I can't do this to Doc.
He's just being a crybaby, and he's got to get some new friends rather than some old creepy scientist.
And you get your first look at the game's version of George McFly and Biff.
Yeah.
What did you think of George and Biff?
I thought Biff was okay. It was a little like overdone, but he was supposed to be just a villainous character, so it was okay.
Well, I mean, what do you think of his
voice? The voice was okay too. For George McFly, I thought he was way too whiny, and that just threw me off.
Yeah, well, I thought it was a good kind of caricature of some of his most extreme moments.
It works for him, yeah. I just thought it was a little too much at times.
Yeah, and I thought they had them looking pretty good. Like, if you know a lot about Telltale Games, you know they cut corners with a character models a lot.
Mm-hmm. And, I thought the style of the characters was actually pretty interesting. I really like the style.
Yeah, and it's kind of what they did with Monkey Island, but a little bit more realistic. Mm-hmm. I really like how Marty looked, even though he's wearing the exact same thing he did in the movies. He didn't change anything. He has one outfit.
He jumped off a cruise ship.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I didn't know the circus was in town. Well, I guess he was wearing the cowboy outfit for that. But yeah. Yeah, so
go ahead.
Biff's portrayal, I thought it sounded kind of like him, but not really.
Yeah.
George's voice again sounded like him, but not really. But it did a better job than Biff. And you kind of get the tone of the games in this first scene. It's kind of quiet. Like you have that.
Well, technically, this is the second scene. The first scene actually opens up.
All right.
As you're redoing the first scene from the first movie, the time travel scene from the first movie.
Oh yeah.
And then you can either do it, I guess, correctly, or you can do it differently. And then once things start happening differently, Marty wakes up, and then we transition to the first movie, to the first game.
If you do it differently, the entire game changes. Okay, not really.
I wish. but then the main plot of the movie, after nobody knows where Doc Brown is, they're auctioning off his stuff, and then all of a sudden the DeLorean shows up with, I think, Einstein's in it. And there's a tape, and you have to find out how to do it. And it turns out this was a fail-safe protocol, that if something happened to Doc, he would send it back to this point in time, and Marty had to go find out what happened to him.
And Einstein would be there.
And Einstein would be there, because everybody loves Einstein.
Yeah, we're not going to go through the entire plot. But
Yeah, but this is just the setup. And then the first game takes place in 1921? 1931.
Yeah. And before you go back in time, you meet Edna Strickland, which is Principal Strickland's sister. And she's actually a major part of the entire game series.
Yeah, she turns into the main villain in some of the episodes.
Yeah, so 1930s Hill Valley, you kind of get the limitations of Telltale Games too, because all you really see is the town square.
Yeah, like one row of shops.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which they had a lot of nice references in there too. Like there was the law firm was like, if I remember, Zemeckis. Something in Gale, and Zemeckis and Gale were like, Zemeckis was the director of the original Back to the Future movies, and Gale was like, I think the producer or someone he collaborated with. Yeah, okay, writer. And the third person I think was someone who worked on the game. Mm. But it was nice. They have a lot of little references like that, which was very nice.
And you meet a young Doc Brown, Emmett.
Who's annoying?
Think
I'll just
so?
Say that right. He's got kind of like a quirky mannerism, and I didn't hate him. It just comes off very annoying at times, and I'm like, hey, I have to deal with him now.
Well, he is a eccentric.
He is. This teenager. Is, I mean, it works for the character. It really does.
And I thought the voice, James Arnold Taylor, does the voice of him.
Oh, is that who? Okay.
Yeah. And he got like pretty spot on for a younger version of Doc, I thought.
Yeah, he did a pretty good job with that.
He originally was gonna, he auditioned for the role of Marty. And
oh really?
Yeah, they ended up giving him Doc's role. I think the kind of the weak point of all the episodes shines through in this game. Not necessarily in the puzzles, which aren't that hard in this first game.
Yeah.
But the it's just the engine that Telltale uses is just seems really limiting, and like because there's a chase scene right in this first episode where Kid Tannen, which is like the gangster version of Biff, is a chasing Marty throughout the streets, and it just seems really not exciting.
Yeah, it's like hey, he has to run 6 steps this way.
Yeah.
And now he's at the other end of the scenery.
Because they only have like
a city block.
And I guess some of the movies, some of the chase scenes, they literally just go in a circle.
They do.
But since you have like a camera and all that, it seems more exciting.
Yeah, it looks like they only like rendered half of this the town square anyway, cuz you only see one or two angles of it.
Mhm. And I think that's a criticism that a lot of people had, is like there's just a few graphical bugs.
Yeah.
And like the puzzles were, I think you use Einstein to solve a puzzle like literally 3 times in this episode.
Yeah, yeah. They were pretty easy and somewhat repetitive. Yeah. I turned hints off because I'm, you know, this is too easy. I think throughout the entire series, I used hints like 3 times where I was just completely stuck.
Well, there came a point where I was like, I don't really care about solving this puzzle, so I'll just get a hint if I were to go.
Yeah.
But overall, I felt for someone to make it a Back to the Future game all these years later, and the first one to really stay true to the movie franchise, that they did a really good job of recapturing that.
They did. I mean, it does capture a lot of things, especially with all the references and little things. I did think the use of everybody's name being the same was a little stupid.
You mean it's like, oh, you just happen to run into these characters.
Biff and Tiff and Griff and Jiff and all that stuff. And like, everybody's name the same. Just because, keep it, I guess, kid friendly or something like that, which is fine. But it just seems like, really, you're gonna go in that direction?
You meet Arthur McFly, which is George McFly's dad.
And he goes by Artie.
Artie.
Artie Marty. See there? See what they did?
Oh, God, I just now got that. But, so, like, it ends on a cliffhanger where, you know, Marty's disappearing, and they figure out they have to go back in time and, like, stop Kid Tannen.
Yeah, they managed to save Doc, but they screwed up some other stuff. So Doc was, like, in jail this first scene, and he was going to be assassinated, or he's going to be killed or something.
Yeah.
So they saved him from that. And then the second game starts up with you going back to that part, pretty much what you did in the first game, and trying to change things around from there, if I remember correctly. Is that right?
Yeah, and it was a very reminiscent of Back to the Future 2.
Yeah.
And I wish they had more of that.
Yeah, that was actually, I like that, when you have to watch out for your old self.
Yeah, and really it wasn't like that big a deal, like avoiding.
Yeah.
Because it was all story driven, and like the game put you where you had to be.
Yeah.
Like, you couldn't really mess up at all.
You couldn't screw up the time space continuum.
You've created a time paradox.
Oh, this is heavy.
This is heavy. So this kind of... There wasn't really anything super special about this episode.
Yeah. I thought the 1930s setting was a little dubious. Like, it seemed like... I mean, it makes sense that they would go there. Because it is a significant enough change, and they're, you know, from everything where else, and they go from the 80s to the 50s, the 2015s, and the 1880s.
Well,
so they're running out of decades to do it.
I think they really wanted to see a young Doc.
Yeah, that too. But yeah, in that sense, it works.
Yeah, so this episode like basically takes place in all the same locations as a...
More or less,
as the first episode. And I remember reading a lot of criticisms about that.
Mm-hmm. That was probably my least favorite episode.
Yeah, because like other Telltale games, like the Monkey Island games, you visit a lot of the same areas, but they always add new ones.
Backtracking.
Yeah. And this one, I think they literally have like one new set at the very end of the game. Mm-hmm. That's about it.
And this one, okay, so in this one, you have to set things right, and you do. You get introduced to some other characters.
I thought you meet
Trixie.
Yeah, you meet Trixie, and you meet the police officer. What's his face?
Dan, wasn't it?
He's Jennifer's.
That's right. He's Jennifer's great granddad. And then what happens is that at the end of this one, instead of setting Doc up on to become a scientist, he meets the young Edna Strickland.
He meets a girl.
He meets a girl.
Oh, girl.
And
cooties who.
Ew. And they end up, instead of, he's supposed to go see Frankenstein, that was supposed to spark his interest in science, and now he meets a girl, and that sparks his interest in girls.
And everything.
And
so,
this ends on another cliffhanger.
He gets whipped.
Yeah, essentially.
And when Marty goes back to the future, the Doc he knows is gone, and Hill Valley is like a...
1984. It turns into like a police state trying to run on super efficiency. Because Edna Strickland, her character, she was like, she was against prohibition. She was like a Zionist in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
This was my favorite episode just because it did that alternate reality.
Yeah, mine
take
too.
On this.
It felt slightly futuristic. It didn't take place in the future,
yeah.
But it felt like they like grabbed because the technology was supposed to be more efficient, and Doc was like inventing everything for the society.
Yeah, it was like interesting to kind of rediscover these characters.
Yeah.
Like Amari's mom is a
is
a character, and I thought they did a good job with her.
They did. They brought back. Hold on a sec. We'll cut this out.
Okay. We're not cutting this out. No, we're cutting this out.
Sorry about that. An alarm go off. Okay.
Alarm for what?
I don't know. I just turned it off.
Are your biscuits burning?
They might be. So where was it? They also brought back Jennifer as her timeline was editor. She's not like a punk rocker.
Yeah.
And
they got the original voice actress.
Did they? The original first one or the original second?
The original first movie voice.
Really? Oh, that's nice.
And he sounds like a middle-aged woman in this case. I mean, because that's what she is.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't get over.
Yeah. For those of you who don't know, the original Jennifer was played by one actress in the first movie. And then she couldn't come back. Her family, I think her mother had cancer at the time. And she couldn't come back to do episodes 2 and 3. So they brought in another actress. They actually reshot almost all the footage from the end of the first movie. They reshot that.
Right.
And with the new actress, shot for shot. And so I guess then they got the original actress back.
Yep. And like I said, like she's a fine voice actress for this.
Mm.
It's just weird hearing her voice come out of a was supposed to be like a 17-year-old girl.
Yeah.
And I wasn't a fan of her character model because...
Well,
really?
Yeah.
Because, well, maybe because I noticed it was just an altered version of a Trixie.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, they had almost exactly the same face. And,
I guess you're right.
And all that stuff. And like I said, Telltale does this a lot, especially in their other games where... they just kind of reuse the same model, but kind of edit it. And you kind of notice it in some of the secondary characters in this game. Like you might see a guy with a mustache, and the next one he has a beard. You know, but it's the same guy.
Story wise, what did you think?
Like I said, this was the most interesting one.
Yeah.
Because I guess because it had the most dialogue out of like almost all the games, I think.
This one was pretty heavy, and they did have... It actually had a lot of nice... Oh, still in the story, but there had a lot of nice sets in this one, too.
Mm-hmm. And again, it was still kind of the same sets, but it was more interesting.
Yeah, they're all redressed. Then we go into Doc Brown's office, which was really cool.
Mm. Oh, yeah, you got to see that, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, you find out Edna's, like, ruling the town with an iron fist.
Using Doc Brown to develop things to keep anything that's questionable.
They have
it's just like just straight out of 1984. They got
They have a Citizen Plus program.
Yeah,
where like
it's basically Google Plus but with citizens.
Citizens.
Yeah.
And so like no impure thoughts. Everything it has a place.
Yeah, the Citizen Plus program is pretty much the like the Serum 114 from Clockwork Orange, where it pretty much just forces people, it makes them sick if they do anything bad or have bad thoughts or anything like that.
And they actually do
a visual cue to that movie at the end of the episode.
Really?
Yeah, the picture you see of Doc, he's like strapped down to something and his eyes are forced open, and that's straight from the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but the one thing I didn't like was the whole like part of the episode was Marty trying to win, because Marty's supposed to be like a nerd in this episode, and he's trying to win back Jennifer.
Yeah,
which I thought was like, well, why are we deviating from saving the present? Does it really matter? And it does matter because in the next episode she does help you. But
well, like it wasn't you had to get demerits
Yeah, you had to do bad things, and you didn't have to kind of...
And she was, like, the only bad person around to help you.
Yeah, pretty much. Somewhat.
I wanted to see inside Marty's room when he's a nerd.
Yeah.
And see Marty with, like, big thick glasses or whatever. Yeah, so, again, this episode kind of had kind of a fight scene between you and Biff, but it just didn't seem exciting the way the game rendered it.
Yeah. It ends on a pretty good note, but...
Yeah, like, they have a kind of a new version of Doc Brown that doesn't know who Marty is.
He's bald.
He's almost completely bald. And you actually stay with this Doc for almost the rest of the series.
Yes. Is that you end up... Well, actually, that's not in this episode. In this episode, you convince him what's actually going on, and then he gets taken and put into the Citizen Plus program via Edna.
Oh, yeah, this is another part that bugged me. He had this picture on his desk the day he caught Biff Tannen, right? It was like a newspaper clipping. And, like, in the background, in the gazebo is Marty and old Doc, right?
Right.
He never noticed that. They're not that hard to see.
He was. I think it was implied that he was pretty much just kind of brainwashed a little bit by Edna.
Maybe.
Not literally, but just, like, he wouldn't have remembered anything. But anyway, this episode ends with Doc being taken away, and the next episode you get taken away, and you have to kind of escape, and then escape with Doc.
Yeah, this next one is out of Double Visions.
Double Visions. And it starts off, you're in, like, a holding cell. The person next to you, the cell next to you is Jennifer. Biff is one more cell down, and then Doc's in the middle of this room getting stuff sprayed in his face to turn him normal or something.
Yeah, in this episode you escape and you go back to 1930s and you have to get young Doc interested in science again, right?
Mm.
Yeah.
Hold on, actually, another phone call. I seem to be popular today, so get that later. Sorry, so where were we?
Okay, so in this episode, you go back to 1930s, and you have to get young Emmett interested in science again.
Mm.
And what do you think of... Because obviously we thought episode 3 was probably the best one.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how did it feel?
This one kind of expanded on it, and I did actually like the... Because for the most part, you're in the one room for a good portion of the episode. And I like that the puzzles are kind of condensed into that one area, because you have more puzzle per the one area you're in.
Yeah, you basically have Emmett's basement and then the front yard of the school.
Yeah.
Where it just so happens all the items you need are in those two rooms.
Yeah.
And so you have to try to get Edna to break up with Doc. Like, there's some, like, problems with the time machine.
That's right, because you end up going back.
It's like, I'm going to test out the time circuits, and he leaves and comes right back. It's like, I've been gone for 12 hours.
And then he does that again. He's like, I was gone for 14 hours this time. Which means that basically there were 3 or 4 iterations of Doc Brown.
There's in a town full of Docs avoiding each other. Yeah, so again, like, as the follow-up to episode 3, I thought, I was like, well, this is kind of going back to what the other episodes were like. Mm-hmm. But it had the story elements of like alternate Doc Brown. I thought that was pretty interesting.
And it's always nice when they do the alternate timelines, I mean, with the alternate characters. Because
mm-hmm.
they get to play around with, like, the motivations for it. And basically what this episode is that Doc at first wants to help you out, and then he gets a soft spot for Edna again, and then he wants to stop you. And it ends on you stopping Edna, making them break up with each other, and then you go back to, or then Doc Brown finds Edna, the old Doc Brown finds Edna, and then they talk.
Yeah.
And that's how it ends. Then we get to the fifth episode.
Well, I actually really liked, at first Doc was like, it's like, oh, I could turn my life around, but then he says, like, well, what about Edna? It's like, what happens to her life and all that stuff, and she's going to be a crazy old cat lady, basically.
Mm.
And, like, so I actually felt bad for Doc.
Yeah.
In that thing, but I knew, like...
Well, he was going to disappear anyway.
Yeah. So then, series finale, Out of Time.
Which
I thought,
is a great name.
Yeah. A great name for an underwhelming episode.
I really do want that license plate on my car.
Yeah, I didn't really like this episode that much.
It wrapped up nicely. Sort of.
Yeah, like, long story short, young Emmett does a science project. Everything's fine, but Edna is kind of found out for being the one that got old Doc arrested in the first place. Mm-hmm. And she steals
the
time machine.
The original old Doc.
Yeah, the original
Doc. Yeah, the original old Doc who was stuck there. We have the young Doc. We have the new old Doc that Marty's hanging up, that went back with Marty.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the one trying to mess everything up. Actually, I like this one had a lot more puzzles. It had the glass room puzzle,
which
was okay. It had a couple other there's stuff to do in the science area, in the science exhibits. And again, you were condensed to that one room, so you had a bunch of puzzles in the one room.
Yeah,
and then,
that part was okay. And actually, I thought the episode kind of fell apart, ironically, during the more interesting part where Edna steals the time machine and changes history.
Yeah, because it felt like they could have done more with it.
Yeah.
And then they kind of rushed off the last two. You go through the last two parts pretty quickly.
You get a cameo from Michael J. Fox.
Yes, he played two characters in this movie, which was very nice, or in this game. It was very nice they got him back. Michael J. Fox, of course, has Parkinson's, so he doesn't do much acting anymore.
Yeah, not to be... I don't want to hate on the guy, because obviously he has a disease that affects his speech and energy.
Yeah.
And stuff, but I didn't really like his voice acting in this game. I thought he felt way too rushed.
Yeah, well, like, and that's the thing, is that he's kind of forced to do that just because of the Parkinson's.
Yeah, and that's why I didn't...
Yeah. It was still nice to have him back, though.
Yeah, he plays... he actually played that baby in Back to the Future 3, all grown up. Remember,
that's right, he plays Seamus, and he plays an adult version of Seamus.
No, he played, Seamus's son.
You're right, Seamus's son, I'm sorry, yeah.
It was that character.
He's like, that's Seamus, he's my great-grandfather.
He peed on me.
He peed on me.
Yeah, so that's pretty good.
Yeah.
So then when history changes, you find out Hill Valley burnt to the ground, basically, and then you get this kind of boring puzzle sequence where you're talking to old, really old, crazy Edna. And, the game just kind of went to a halt, like, during that whole segment. And then you go back in time again to a few years before the timeline and Back to Future 3. So, like 18...
Let's see, 1889. No, I'm sorry, that's 1986. 18 does not mention it on Wikipedia. So, oh, there it is, 1876, and the third movie took place 1885.
Yeah, so it was just really random to show up, basically at the outside of the saloon. That's all you see. You have a puzzle sequence with a Mac.
Yeah, this one actually annoyed me because this was one of the times where I actually had to use the full hint.
Oh no!
For something, and it's because it wasn't obvious of there was an object I could touch or I could activate, and it, at no point you use it, you make a mention of it. I'm like, and I try clicking on what would be the more obvious thing to touch, because it's like you have to push one thing that pushes another thing that pushes a third thing, and you can't touch the second thing, and you can't even look at the third thing to say maybe I need to move this. And so I thought that was, like, really bad puzzle design at that point.
Maybe, but again, I keep saying this around this review thing, but it's like we have an exciting standoff between a cowboy and he's holding someone at gunpoint, and all they do is, like, shout one-liners back at each other. It's like, that's not that exciting.
Yeah, and it's sort of, you kind of have to do that with, because you're not part of the shootout. I mean, in the old adventure games, it would be like the villain would come up to you, or the bad guy would come up to you, and then they'd be threatening to do something. They'd do something like a wind-up. And then before they would do their thing that would eventually kill you, You would have to take out the correct inventory item or type the right command. You have to do it in a certain amount of time. Not being part of the standoff, you don't have that time limit. So I was walking around for maybe like 5-10 minutes trying to be like, what do I have to do? Why are they not shooting at each other yet?
Yeah, one thing they
it breaks the flow.
Yeah, one thing they do in the Monkey Island games, usually for like the last big confrontation, is it's kind of hard to explain. It's just like a repetitive series of events. It's like in one scene in Monkey Island, like you're on the deck of this pirate ship, and the bad guy throws you to another part, and then he keel hauls you under the ship, and then he does this and he does that, and you have
it's moving from point A to point B.
Yeah, you have an opportunity to solve the puzzles in each one of these new screens. And in this one you just have who's supposed to be like this bloodthirsty cowboy, just kind of
which was like Tannen's first. It was prior to Mad Dog Tannen.
I thought it was Mad Dog.
Oh, it might have been Mad Dog Tannen, but he was like the cop. He was like a cop or something in this one.
Yeah, he was like the founder of the tavern.
Yeah, Beauregard Tannen. I don't know. I don't know if that was Mad Dog or not.
I have no idea.
Because he hates that name.
Buford, I think, was Mad Dog's name.
Okay.
But yeah, like, in long story short, you stop Edna, you go back in time to the present, and Doc is actually living at his house. And then the crazy twist happens.
Crazy twist! Which, everything's normal. Turns out Edna and then Kid Tannen, who was originally, I guess, dead in the original timeline, they're together now, and Edna's not a complete grump.
Mm-hmm.
Doc Brown is now living, I think, more so at 1986 residence, the present residence. And then Marty McFly in the future shows up, and then Marty McFly in the other future shows up, and then Marty McFly in the third future, as played by Michael J. Fox, shows up.
I thought that was pretty funny, actually.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. Like, their outfits were cool, and then the other one comes up, and he's just like, he feels like it's like a Han Solo character. He just comes up all pissed.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm tired of you screwing up my timeline. And then, like, Doc and Marty just kind of, like, look at each other, and they're like, you know what? Let's not deal with this now. And they get in the DeLorean and do the fly into the camera time travel thing, because they can just come back to that point at any time. And they're like, let's just go have another adventure.
Mm-hmm.
Considering that that's all that happens when they use the time machine is something screws up and they have to spend the entire next week and a half trying to fix it.
Yeah, because like when I was watching that, I was thinking, it's like, okay, they're obviously trying to riff off the first movie when Doc comes back.
Yeah.
And they even kind of mirror that scene almost
yeah, he's
exactly.
Got like those glasses and
it's like
crazy stuff like that.
Yeah, they like a role reversal and all that. And then another DeLorean comes in and then another one from a dystopian future comes in. And to be continued. So we'll see.
It did end with a to be continued, which was they're probably not going to, but
yeah, we'll see if they actually do. So we kind of spent this review kind of reviewing
the game. So spoiler alert.
Well, I mean like review.
Go back in time and then warn yourself about the spoilers.
Mark, you gotta go back with me. You gotta warn everyone about the spoilers.
What, do we become like a-holes or something?
Yeah, but as I was saying, like we kind of talked about the story and kind of went through it, but like what did you think of like this being a Back to the Future game?
I thought it held true to the series. It may have been like oversimplified. I do have a lot of complaints about it. I still enjoyed it. I liked all the references. I thought the game, even though it was a simple adventure game, it was still fun. The stories were decent, and they did a good job with it. I'd give it a thumbs up. Not a very big thumbs up, but I'd definitely say if you're a fan of the movie, definitely get the game.
Yeah, I think they, like for what they did, they said like this is a Back to the Future style game. It has the same type of like humor and stuff like that, and like a story points. I just think my biggest complaint about it is production quality.
Mm.
Like, not necessarily, like, it looks pretty and all that. I thought some of the lip-sync...
Glitches, lip-sync. That had parts where I think audio just didn't work. And then, like, the next line it would come back.
Yeah. And, like, the lip-sync, it's kind of an issue in all the Telltale games because they have this tool that automatically does it.
Since they're lazy.
Well, it's just a time saver.
Yeah.
But it just seemed more obvious in this game in some places.
Yeah. There were also parts where, like, you would have, like, during the thing where you're trying to get crazy, I had to remember. I remember going over to, like, the outhouse. You're supposed to burn the outhouse. And if you're doing it at the wrong time, she's standing over on the side and she'll yell at you. And I did that when she was sitting in the car. And I went back, okay, now I'm supposed to do the fire thing. And that was the wrong spot. She's then standing outside the thing in the original spot yelling at me.
I noticed so that too.
Yeah, it's a continuity error. It's something that they missed. They forgot to put in, she should be yelling from the car. Or they caught it too late and they couldn't put it in.
Yeah, I thought some characters needed more dialogue options.
Mm-hmm.
And just some of the puzzle design seemed overly simplified. Because, like, you know, adventure games, you just do some crazy, convoluted stuff.
Adventure games used to have the ill-fated no-win state, where the game would not end, but you could never win.
Yeah, and those LucasArts game never did that. But
Sierra game did that in a couple
times. Sierra games, yeah. That's happened to me a couple times. But, but adventure games usually have, like, kind of sometimes logical, sometimes illogical puzzle design.
Yeah.
And one of their goals was, well, let's try to make this not true to real life as possible, but let's, like, real-world solutions to these things.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it just kind of made it uninteresting or really easy. Like, all you had to do was talk to someone, and that was, you solved a puzzle.
Yeah, yeah.
Just some of the animation quality, while it was good in spots, it didn't quite match the action it was trying to go for.
And we being animators will probably be able to pick up on that more than maybe the normal person, the average person.
Maybe, but also looking back to Telltale's previous game before this, which was Sam & Max Episode 3 and Monkey Island, I didn't really notice, like, I don't know, like, problems with the animation or the pacing. They were certainly there, but for some reason, it just felt worse with Back to the Future.
It could have been they might have had less of a team, because I'm sure they're working on other games at the same time.
Yeah, Telltale's working on a lot of stuff right now.
Yeah,
it's like
it is nice that they have the Jurassic Park game, because and they're going to explore the canister of eggs in the first movie, right? Was that the
embryos?
Was that the embryos, yeah. Because I've always been like, okay, we saw it get covered up. What's the point? Because they never go back to that part anyway.
Yeah, Jurassic Park was supposed to come out, like, a couple months ago, but they delayed it till fall.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering exactly why that is. Like,
we call it the Duke Nukem Syndrome.
Well, I wonder if they heard some of the criticisms with Back to the Future. They thought some, like, Telltale fans thought it wasn't up to their quality, and they look at Back to Jurassic Park and say, well, maybe we should try to make this one a little bit better, or maybe they're trying to improve on the gameplay system, which is kind of different from like normal point and click thing. It's more like a Heavy Rain type thing where it's context sensitive commands and more stuff like that. Other than you don't really have an inventory.
Well, hopefully they'll definitely make changes for the better based on the feedback. We can only hope. No, we don't know for sure, but we can only hope.
Yeah, and also they have The Walking Dead. They're making The Walking Dead game. They're making a Fable game, which is a DC property.
Mm. Okay.
They're making a new King's Quest.
Oh, that's right. They're working on King's
Quest.
Which
I was never really a King's Quest guy, but I think it's cool that they got a license like that.
Yeah, if they could, I wish they could get Space Quest back. That was my favorite.
Yeah, I hope that's the next one, because that's the game that got me into adventure games, Space Quest.
Yeah, they were great. Yeah, if you've never played that because you're like 13 or something, go play them. If you can find them.
It's on Steam.
Right. That's right. They're all on Steam.
Space Quest.
Go play them on Steam.
Yeah,
make sure you can type fast.
Yeah, like the first...
Do they have the original one on Steam, or do they have, like, the remake of the first one, do you know?
I actually have no idea. Because they remade the first game into a point-and-click game.
Yeah.
But yeah, these are these old EGA games where you have to type in your commands.
Yeah, yeah. The first couple were like that. Then, like, number six for Space Quest was really well done. And then it got canceled. No, seven got canceled. But, yeah. But anyway, those are other games.
Yeah,
Space. So, Back to the Future. Final verdict?
A solid B. Like,
I would say that, too.
I think because
I'm a fan, big fan of the movies.
Well, so am I. Like, I think if I looked at it just as a story in game form,
mm-hmm.
it'd probably be a little bit higher. But mm-hmm. I just thought compared to the Telltale's other games that it the quality just didn't quite reach the same level.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you can check out Sam and Max. You kind of have to play all the seasons to get the most out of it. But season 3 of Sam and Max is actually really clever and well-designed.
Try that out. And anybody at home, also check out all the old Sierra games. Police Quest, King's Quest, Space Quest, and Laser Suit Larry.
I know you can get King's Quest and Space Quest collection on Steam.
Yeah.
I think there might be a Laser Suit Larry one, too.
I never played any of those, but
I was too young.
It's supposed to be pretty funny. Yeah, we were too young at the time.
I was too young to play that game. Yeah. And by the time I was old enough, I didn't care anymore.
So,
Back to the Future, it's only $25 for 5 episodes, so I think it's definitely worth playing.
Yep.
Like I said, I just don't think it quite reached level quality that I expected from Telltale.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping this isn't a sign of their future games.
Ironic.
But okay, hopefully this was an entertaining episode.
Yep.
And we will talk to you later.
To be concluded.
To be continued.
Dun, 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 dun.
In our Captain America, the First Avenger review. Hopefully we get Randy on here.
Hopefully. Because I wouldn't have seen the movie.
Yeah, because you didn't see it, so you're not going to be on it.
Okay, so goodbye, everyone.
Bye-bye.